Welcome to the RRBF podcast. In Dutch, it's called The Steen. In English, it's called, of course, The Stone. These podcast episodes are made possible by Hollis. We made these episodes during the MIPIM in Cannes at a sunny rooftop bar, and we interviewed a couple of people from the industry about what is going on at MIPIM, what is going on in their business. We talked about, of course, ESG. We had a couple of amazing sessions, so I hope you will enjoy all episodes that we recorded together with Hollis. Enjoy listening. Okay, here we are at the Hollis rooftop bar, event. It's 2 days or not here at Hollis.
2 days on the rooftop, yeah.
Catherine, how are you?
I'm great. The sun is shining. It's great.
It's great to be here. How is MIPIM so far for you?
I've had a fantastic time.
Yeah, it's unbelievable or not?
Yeah, it's amazing.
These podcasts that we do here at the rooftop, we always bring somebody. Who have we now in this podcast? Can you introduce him?
Oh, well, first you brought me.
Yeah.
Should I introduce myself?
Yes, for sure.
Okay. Well, I'm Catherine Beiser, and I head up the ESG consulting team at Hollis. And I have brought Zoltan, if I said that right? Zoltan, from Scalar. And we like to work with Scalar in terms of data collection and visualization.
Cool. Zoltan, what do you do?
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. That's what we do. We do ESG data collection, visualization, help with reporting. And most importantly, we also help our customers plan for the future.
Cool. But you are all the way from New York.
Yes.
What do you do here at MIPIM all the way from New York?
Our customers are global. So we have customers from the US, Europe, Asia, Australia.
Wow.
And actually, usually my co-founder Luke would have been here because it's Europe, but he's actually in Australia. So
They're really busy.
We're very busy.
So you mentioned already the words ESG. Because you're head of ESG. How important is ESG these days in real estate?
Well, luckily for me, it's growing in importance. But I always say I've always been interested in sustainability in the built environment. And, you know, a few years ago, even like as little as 4 years ago, people always said, oh, that's nice. You know, it was a footnote on the end of a project or the end of an investment decision.
Yeah, it wasn't nice to have.
We'll put it on the last page of our presentation. And now it's really become the driver for a lot of decisions and a lot of investment decisions. And obviously, we're very happy about that.
So it's now on the first page?
Now on the first page, yeah, the cover.
Cool. That's great. Yeah. How do you see the involvement in this in the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think very similar. The way that I sort of see it obviously started with sort of voluntarily reporting. It becomes somewhat mandatory when it came to fundraising. So if you're a fund, you would have to report because it would make your fundraising life easier. Now we're layering in compliance, as in like regulatory compliance. So in Europe, we call it the acronym SOUP, like whether it's like SFDRs or like any other combination. Yeah, any other combination of four letters or three letters. So that's like sort of the last wave. And then I think the next wave, which is sort of slowly coming, or it's like a hidden one, it's actually going to impact basically like your everything related to the financing of the buildings and the sale and acquisition of buildings. So what we're seeing right now is that people have to start looking at like, what is a building going to be worth in 2030, 2040? And basically take into account how much money they need to spend to prepare it for either climate resilience, for sustainability, hitting all of the targets that are set in the future. And if you're not thinking about it right now, you're overvaluing the value of a lot of buildings in your portfolio.
Yeah. And we're getting a lot of questions on that as well. So that was always a question, is like, how do I maintain my exit value? But now they're very specific. Like in 2030, we want to exit. What do we need to do to make sure we've got a top asset in 2030?
Oh, really?
And those types of questions, I think, are really exciting.
And when do we need to do what in the time past till 2030?
Yeah, or even like we're doing a refurbishment project now, but we want to make sure it's not just good for now, but it's good for 2030 as well.
When we're going to sell.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. And what kind of information do you need to make, to advise?
A lot of information.
Yeah.
First, we need the address, which you'll be surprised is sometimes difficult to get.
Oh, really?
Location of the building.
I can
real estate is always about location, and we don't know the address.
We've seen funds where they don't know the actual address of the buildings that they own.
Come on.
Yeah, that does happen.
So everyone talks about data, and it's always like, well, good luck.
this is really like a starting point, the address.
Yeah. And the location, you know, sometimes you show up to site and we don't know which building we're looking at. But okay, so that's important. And then
what
after
else?
Data, right, is the big conversation. But we always ask for things like floor plans, O&M manuals, annual data is sort of the bare minimum of what we want to get. I'll be honest, very rarely do we get everything that we ask for. And that's fine. We can still make recommendations. But of course, the more information we have in the beginning, the better it's going to get.
And how do you then work together with Scalar?
Yeah, so it's a dream for me if Scalar's on board because they'll have lots of data. Because hopefully the client then has lots of data already input into Scalar. And this
it's
is...
It's into place.
Yeah.
And beyond even like a floor plan, which is something that sometimes is difficult to have. If you're on Scalar, then I can see, okay, what are the risks in your portfolio? Where do we need to start working? Rather than just, making a decision without sort of an informed data backing to it.
Do all these real estate companies have already like these kind of strategies for all their assets?
Some do.
Or is it just at a starting point?
I'd say it's a bit mixed. More of the institutional investors with more of a developed ESG strategy. And, it's coming.
They are ready.
Yeah, they'll have one. But there's plenty of people. The first question we always ask is, what's your ESG strategy? And lots of times...
And what then happens?
We're still unsure.
Well, how do you see MIPIM? How do people react here on ESG? Because if you look into MIPIM and you type in ESG in the attendees, it's like 190 people that has ESG in their... So that's not much. How do you see people talking about this topic these days?
I think it's honestly mixed feelings. I think there's a lot of attendees. It's sometimes a subject, but not always the main subject. I think one disappointment I had this morning, I finally got to go to one of the areas, and it's like one area, I think it's like the road to zero. But they put it in the basement, like minus one.
The road to net zero.
And it was basically pretty deserted. There's like no one, there's not many people there.
I can't believe that. I feel like everything I attend, it's like ESG, net zero, the biggest topic.
Yeah, and I think that, so I sort of had a mixed feeling because I was expecting a little bit more. But also a lot of, I think the good conversations that were like the ones that weren't supposed to be about ESG or sustainability, they were about like financing and fundraising and getting sort of the money for the funds. That always is like a topic because they know that they cannot go raise more money or buy certain buildings.
If they're not sustainable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it does come back in that same conversation. So it's like not a topic specifically for ESG. It's part of the real estate world that we live in today.
Yeah. Is it already being implemented enough, do you think, within real estate? Or is just a lot of people still thinking, well...
No, I think we've moved a lot. So this is my third MIPIM, and I would say the first one 3 years ago, people were talking about it a lot, but it was like very sort of fresh, what is it? What are we going to do? And now I feel like I'm having really good conversations about like concrete actions and concrete action plans. So I think we've moved really far in the discussion, but of course, there's always more to do.
Yeah. Well, how can we make... impact with having your strategy within ESG? How can a company or real estate company make impact on that?
How do you determine impact? What kind of impact would you want to make?
Well, impact in the environment, impact in making better buildings, impact in making a better healthy portfolio, impact in making also creating a better built world for the environment, for people where we live in.
How do you drive impact?
Yeah, how do you drive impact? Yeah.
That is a good question. I guess, I used to think it would come from the bottom up, trying to design sustainable buildings, but I've been really amazed to see that it's quite coming from the top down now. So from investors and kind of the money pushing it, which is working. So that's a good sign. What the money's asking for is what people will deliver.
Yeah. Is it the pension funds that are really...
Yeah, I think it definitely there's a portion of it. And I think that's the good part. It's that there's a good incentive coming from where the money flows. I think you need another incentive because there's a very big long tail of buildings that are owned by individuals or smaller companies that don't have that pressure.
No, they don't have the pressure of a big real estate developer.
Exactly. So for them, it's usually has to be regulations that are the incentive because otherwise there's not much except for like intrinsic motivation, which not everyone will have to decarbonize the buildings.
Yeah. There's still a lot to be done, or not?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think there's still, on the regulatory side, enough things that we can do. And I think that as like an industry is something we can also be advocates for and proponents of, like, what are like good policies that we can implement around the world that will help us drive forward.
Which parts of the world do you see are the like the most active right now on this theme? Is it Europe that is leading the way? Or is it difficult to say?
I think it's difficult to say. And also, I think there's a lot of... I don't agree personally with every policy. I think there's good and bad policies. And I think that's the hard part is with a lot of policies, you don't know until they're implemented whether they're good or bad or have like a certain effect. I think a good example of this would be the energy labels. So energy labels were sort of a good thing in the beginning because at least you have some data about a building being sustainable or not sustainable.
Yeah.
But even if we look in our own data, we have this one chart in our platform that on one axis we put the energy label and one other axis we put the energy use intensity. And then we can see like a triple A building that's like really good, like A++ label with a super high energy use intensity. That's not a sustainable building.
That's crazy.
They're probably doing something in that building that they shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
We actually... one of our customers found like a Bitcoin mine in one of the units through sort of that analysis.
Oh no, really?
Yeah, but those are sort of that basically says like yes, it's like a policy that worked, but we should be much more policing on sort of the energy usage. And coming back to like,
but that's also difficult because some companies use more energy than other companies.
But if you look at, for instance, like Local Law 97, it's like a policy for New York City that actually looks at the energy usage. So you have to report your energy usage, and it's also denoted by type of industry. So you're not, as a hotel, you're not expected to have the same energy use intensity per square meter or feet as a residential building.
Or as a data center.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's like a good one, but it's also much more intensive one because you need to collect all of the data, report all of the data.
Yeah.
So that's a very costly policy to implement.
And the other thing that's hard is the good thing about EPCs is people understand it and people have really grabbed onto that rating system. But it's challenging when someone has an EPC A building and then you find out, but you actually have a really high energy use. They think they're doing something good. And then you have to come back later and explain to them that they're not and they've still got work to do. And that's always a tough conversation to have.
Yeah, because then you need to empower those people to really make the next step.
Well,
they think they already did.
They think they already did. And, you know, they think, maybe we've bought this great building or we've done some great investment. But then you're now telling them they've got to do more investments. And yeah, no one wants to hear that.
No.
Yeah.
Do we see already a change in the value of buildings that are really aligned with everything? Is the value getting up for those buildings? Or is it more like everybody's saying, well, if you're not aligned, your building is getting less worse?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. Everyone's trying to like figure out how to put ESG into valuations, and there's lots of guidance coming out about that right now.
Yeah.
But I think it's pretty anecdotal as well. So, you know, we'll see some buildings sell for more, we think, because they have good ESG criteria. I was just talking to another client who said that they just sold some buildings that had no ESG criteria for a top dollar. So it's very...
And then they still got a good price.
Yeah, inconclusive.
Yeah, and it's also really, it's interesting because it's very different property by property type and location by location. So especially like office buildings in certain locations where work from home is still a more of a thing than in other locations. There you have to be sort of a top class building, both on sustainability, ESG, and all of the others. Will you be able to sell it? While in some other locations, there's still a shortage and you get away with not having it.
Yeah.
Because the demand is so high.
Yeah.
And then the same for residential buildings. Some areas, residential buildings are very much needed in other areas.
So what is needed to make on this value proposition or value of buildings? What is needed to get this aligned?
That's a good question.
Because is it location? Is it demand?
No, I think whenever there's like an imbalance in any marketplace, if there's more supply than demand or the other way around, there's more demand or supply, that imbalance will be the driving factor of evaluation. So
always.
So the moment
it doesn't even matter if you're sustainable or not.
Nothing, even the sustainability or like the maintenance of the building. I think a good example would be like all of the big cities in the world, like when it comes to like residential. If you look at like London, New York, Paris, like you spend millions on a building and then you need to pour in like more buildings just to maintain it, but then you got your building or your condo in London or in New York. just because there's a shortage of it. So that's then the driving factor. So
yeah,
but I think it's more interesting because like most markets aren't actually that like in balance from like a supply and demand perspective. And I think that's where that's the majority of it. And I think that's where you can actually start seeing some sort of correlation between ESG sustainability and those assets, but we're still too early for it.
So what is needed to upcoming year? What do you think is going to happen next 2 years in real estate and ESG?
I think it's really interesting that the market is starting to sort of coalesce around a few standards. So like the CRREM standard has become really important and kind of everyone's grabbing onto that. And I think it's a good sort of, the good governance around it in terms of how the standard was developed. And
you have so many different kind of standards.
Yeah, so many.
So is it good that we get to CRREM another
standard? Yeah, and it's horrible. You never want to say like, and we need another one. But okay, this is maybe a good one for operational energy use. I think we need, you know, a few more of those to come into place so everyone really knows where they're going. And that will help the industry.
Yeah, because energy is just one one thing, because there's a lot more.
Right. So if we can get something for embodied carbon as well.
Yeah.
Maybe SBTI is a good one for now. But and then hopefully something for social value will come up and something for biodiversity. And we'll start to get all the puzzles.
The whole puzzle.
Yeah. And then I think CRREM personally is something that I think if it gets adopted widely, will definitely help with...
Which I would say it is already being adopted widely.
But I think that one will help us answer the question around like future value of those buildings, because then you can actually start looking at, okay, how risky is my building going to be 5 and 10 years from now according to the CRREM standard? Because the CRREM standard has modeled out what they expect the energy usage of all of these property types to be 10, 20 years from now.
Yeah.
And that will help doing that analysis. If you're not looking at that analysis right now, it will be really hard to have any idea of how risky your investment will be when it comes to meeting that standard or not.
Cool. What else is needed in the industry? Standards? Something else you would like to see the upcoming 2 years? Yeah? Yeah. Why that?
There's different legislation in every country.
It makes it difficult.
It makes it difficult. Sometimes there's not good legislation at all. There's the new EPBD legislation that's supposed to come out. That would be great in terms of unifying Europe on many topics, which would be really exciting.
How do you say that legislation? Because you work in all different kind of countries, so all different kind of regulations probably.
Yeah, I think it's like... obviously, we would prefer it to be... I think everyone would prefer it to be a lot simpler. But simpler doesn't always mean better.
And then counting for the whole world.
Yeah, exactly. But I think I said it earlier. I think for some types of assets, you need good legislation because there's very few other incentives to fix it.
To really get the industry to start moving.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, what's up next for you at MIPIM? 2 more days, probably?
2 more days of ESG.
Yeah.
2 more days for only ESG?
Only ESG.
And you, Zlatan?
I think like ESG, but very broadly, like I think the decarbonization, I think talking to companies that are making those investments, doing retrofits, help like renovating their buildings. I think there's an entire industry. I've tried to spend like one evening just to find some numbers like how much money we need to spend to decarbonize the world of real estate. And there's been like some studies, but the numbers are just astonishingly large. Like we're talking like trillions.
Yeah, probably.
And I think that's also like the interesting part is that if you look at like how much we need to spend to decarbonize the real estate world, that's like a dozens of trillions of
that's like unbelievable.
Euros, dollars.
Who's going to pay that? Where's the money coming from?
I think that's a really good question. I think that's why it's such an interesting statistics to think about that. It's like that needs to be managed. People need to make decisions of, okay, how much money are we spending? Where are we going to spend that money? And we need to be doing that for the next like decade or more. And I think that's like a really interesting challenge for the industry to solve.
Cool. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Zlatan and Catherine, for this podcast at the Hollis Rooftop Bar.
So, thank you.
Thank you. Enjoy some drinks because I think the floor is open or not.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the RRBF podcast. Thank you again also, Hollis, for making these episodes possible. And I hope to see you all somewhere at an international trade show. And hopefully we create a better built world together. Bye for now.